Welcome to China Voice, a podcast series on the China Affairs Plus. In this program, we invite scholars and experts to discuss major international issues, from great power relations and global governance to emerging security and diplomatic challenges. Through these conversations, we hope to share diverse perspectives on China's foreign policy and the evolving international landscape. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to China Voice. I'm your host, Sun Chenghao. Artificial intelligence is advancing at an extraordinary pace, but the debate today is no longer just about who has the most powerful models or the most advanced chips. An equally important question is how AI should be governed globally, and whether countries with very different political systems, technological capabilities, and strategic interests can still build common rules and institutions. This year's World Artificial Intelligence Conference, or WIC, offers an interesting window into that debate. Beyond showcasing new technologies, the conference placed much greater emphasis on global AI governance, including the establishment of the World Artificial Intelligence Cooperation Organization, or WICO. So today we are very pleased to be joined by Professor Yao Xu from Fudan University. He has been closely involved in many of these discussions, so I think he's particularly well-placed to help us understand both what happened at WIC and what China is trying to contribute to global AI governance. Professor Yao, welcome to China Voice. Before we dive into our discussion, could you briefly introduce yourself to our listeners, your research and current work, and perhaps also how you became involved in AI governance?
Thank you. Thank you, Professor Sun. Thank you for having me, and I'm honored to be here. My name is Yao Xu. I am the associate professor at Fudan University, Fudan Development Institute, which is the biggest think tank in Fudan University. And I am the Secretary General of the Center for Global AI Innovative Governance, which is a newly built platform launched in the World AI Conference last year. And we try to connect the resources and build the linkages between the friends who are interested in the global AI governance and who can provide the global AI governance international production. We collaborate with more than 20 countries and their leading AI institutes to set up a network, which is a UN-supported AI development capacity building network. And that is very closely linked with my research interests on the area of AI governance, technology governance, and transporter data governance. So I'm very happy to be here, and I'm looking forward to discussing the issues with you, Professor Sun.
Thank you very much for joining us today. And before we get into the broader debate about AI governance, I'd like to start with WIC itself. I've also been following the conference, and my impression is that WIC is gradually evolving from primarily a technology and industry event into a much more international platform connecting technological innovation with global governance, as you also have mentioned. This year, that shift seems particularly visible. We saw broader international participation, a much stronger focus on global governance, and most importantly, the establishment of the WICO. So from your perspective as someone directly involved in this process, what was generally different about WIC 2026? What does the creation of WICO tell us about how the role of WIC itself is changing, and what role has your institution played in the process?
Okay, thank you for the question, Professor Sun. And the questions are very interesting because during this year's WIC, a lot of friends from a lot of places came to Shanghai to discuss about the issues we are interested in. And people are asking, what are the differences between this year's WIC and the WIC before this year? I think it's kind of the evolution of the process, because at the very beginning, World AI Conference, the WIC is mainly focused on the technology, as you mentioned. And it's more like the conference hosted just by the Shanghai government and try to illustrate and show the progresses of the artificial intelligence industry of Shanghai and China. But from 2024, I believe this conference has another title and became a high-level platform for the discussion among the countries and global leaders. No matter in industry and academia and policymaking process, to discuss very important issues and questions raised by the artificial intelligence. So it's not just a technology or industry conference. It became a global AI governance and more a high-level governance conference. So I think that is maybe more obvious in this year's WAC because as far as we see more and more candidates and representatives from not just the global North countries, but also the global South countries to Shanghai and get together to have a lot of sub forums and to go to the exhibitions to see the progresses in China and outside of China. So I think it is more multilateral and more players show in Shanghai in this WEIC. Especially you mentioned the WICO, World AI Cooperation Organization. But actually, it is not the officially launched at this year's WAC, I believe, because more precisely, it is agreement signing ceremony, right? And the idea is raised by Premier Li Qiang at last year's WAIC. And I think the WICO is a very important achievement and idea for WAIC and the whole global AI governance structure. Because there is no other organization specifically titled by World AI Cooperation Organization. And I think the platform and the ideas is very attractive, especially for the many international organizations and many global South countries. During the past year, especially after the idea raised by Premier Li Qiang at last year's WEIC, a lot of friends around the world, they are very curious about this idea. So I think I'm not sure, and I cannot say very clearly about the details because a lot of the discussions, I believe, are still among the governmental levels to discuss. But I can feel the curiosity and the eyesight that people look into this because people are really want to have some maybe more achievements based on this platform and collaborate with more partners according to this initiative.
Yeah, I agree with you that WICO has naturally attracted a lot of international attention this year, but the reactions have been quite mixed. Some countries, particularly in the global South, seem interested in having another platform for AI capacity building and governance. But there is also skepticism, especially about whether China is trying to create an alternative AI governance architecture. My own view is that this debate reflects a much broader problem in today's international politics. Even initiatives designed around global governance are increasingly interpreted or read through the lens of geopolitical competition. So, how does China understand these different reactions to WICO? And what do you think are the main reasons behind both the support and sometimes the skepticism?
Thank you, Professor Sun. I think it's a very interesting question because there are really a lot of voices around this initiative from the beginning of the proposal. I think it's quite normal because WICO is not a very unique thing to be discussed by the world and have the different considerations and voices around that. And as you mentioned, there are a lot of geopolitical things around that to be considered. I think that is quite normal. But I will illustrate this initiative and platform from the other angle because I really hear a lot of ideas from the Global South countries. especially the scholars and the industry. They need the real help, but they don't know where to find the helping hands. I think that is a very emerging questions and problems for all of the countries and the participants in this area. The question is, who can provide the global public goods in the area of AI, and who can do the actual practices on this? I think WICO and the Global South countries can do more on this issue because I can feel the positive attitude from them, and they really want to have more high quality data sets. They really want to have more compute resources. They need the capacity building programs, and they need more global public goods on AI, no matter the hardware or the software or the people who can tell them how to do it. I think that is a very important trend that we should notice because, as you mentioned, there are some skeptical voices that maybe it is maybe some moves from China to compete with US to try to find a broader market in Global South. There are a lot of voices on there, but I think the speeches and the voices from President Xi and many other high-level officials in China, they repeat and emphasize the responsibility from not just China but also global society. They have the responsibility to help the Global South countries. And as the Secretary General of the United Nations, Mr. Guterres, he said there is every people, every country, they have the every right to catch up in the AI era. So I think there are a lot of voices around WICO and the initiatives like something similar to that. I think that is quite normal, but we should maybe step outside from the voices to see which we can really do for the Global South countries. And yes, maybe some Western observers, they prefer to illustrate this initiative as some competition move. But my personal opinion will be more like the inclusive world in AI era can be built by the Global South countries and the Global North countries together. So I think it is a very interesting and important sign from the information we have, according to the WICO, that it is open. It is not just the four specific countries. It is for all of the countries who are interested in this initiative. That is a very important signal. It's not a closed door meeting room. It is open for all of the world. And I think that attitude is very important for all of the world.
Okay.
Professor Sun.
I agree with you that the point you've made on the public good responsibility and the openness of the WICO are very important. And now let's turn from governance to technology itself. Over the past year, China's AI development has moved remarkably quickly. Models such as Kimi K3 suggest that Chinese developers are continuing to narrow the gap at the frontier, while advances in computing infrastructure also show that China is looking for ways to innovate under hardware constraints. But I don't think technological competition can be measured simply by asking who has the strongest model. I think compute, chips, energy, talent, application, safety, and the ability of society to absorb technological change all matter as well. So how would you assess China's AI capabilities today? Where has China made the most significant progress, and where do the most important weaknesses or bottlenecks remain?
It is a very big question to answer, right? And I really agree with you that the capability cannot be estimated only by the capability of the models. The frontier models is very important for AI, indeed, with no doubt. And we all noticed the progresses from Kimi, and not just the Kimi. The GLM just released the latest version yesterday. And there are a lot of companies, the startups and the tech giants in China, like Minimax, like Alibaba. They are releasing their latest frontier models in recent months, not to say DeepSeek, right? I think the model is just one side, and I don't think there is some so-called K3 moment or DeepSeek moment. It is just a moment that outsiders get to know the progresses. But the truth is, before the latest frontier models released, there are a lot of observers from all of the world and the tech community. They have been following up the progresses for a long time. So it's not that new, but maybe it's a crush for a lot of people who are not so following up, catch up the progresses in daily life. So maybe there was a so-called Kimi or DeepSeek moment. But if we are doing some very serious research and we try to catch up the latest trend, maybe we should think about more beyond the sub model moment. So I really agree with you that we should consider more and maybe broader vision on the whole capability of China's AI, not just the industry and maybe more like the ecosystem and the combination between the industry and the technology and research institutes and the scientists. I think if you are talking about the advantages, maybe the ecosystem which is forming and evolving right now in China could be one of the maybe most significant advantages. Because in China right now, the universities, the research institutes, and industry, they communicate very, very frequently and they can achieve remarkable productions together. Their communication barriers are quite low, and a lot of startups, they are turning to have more young talents from the universities directly based on the linkage between the different frontier labs. I think that is a very important and interesting angle to observe the ecosystem. But as you mentioned, there are still a lot of weakness here. And I think maybe the most remarkable one could be the semiconductor issues, the chips, because according to the data from the Stanford Index, the HAI Index, we can see the data center, no matter the numbers or the whole amount of the compute resources, there is a lot of differences between China and the US, and I have to say there is a huge gap between the two countries. So the export controls really influence the whole pace of the industry and the scientific research in China. And as far as I know, there are a lot of startups and independent research teams. They are trying to have more compute resources, but what they can do is still waiting and to try to find some available compute resources. So I think the chips, the semiconductor industry, and the whole compute resources system could be something China should do more on that. But we still can see some progresses on that because, as we all know, there was the national level strategy, which name is Dongshu Xisuan. The East data compute in the West can use the resources from the West areas to benefit the East assembling data and artificial intelligence industries. It is a very grand and huge strategy, and still getting better and better. And maybe we can see how they can allocate the resources around the nation to solve the problems in the future. And I think there is another, maybe better news according to this issue. Because when I discussed with many US friends in the recent days, they kept talking about the concerns from the US people that the people there, they are very concerning about the data centers, and there are a lot of voices against the newly built data centers, even the plans in different states of the United States. I think that is a very interesting comparison between the two countries, because when they ask me, how's attitude from Chinese side? I said, maybe Chinese people here, they have more trust on the strategic planning from the national level or the local government, because based on the East data computing the West strategy and many other high-level planning, every data center and their consideration has a very, very strict process to review and to discuss around the different levels and the different background experts to make it minimize the influence for the water pollution, the air pollution, and many other issues concerning like the lack of power or many other issues. They can try to avoid the issues or build up things so you can solve the problem. So I think the confidence are quite different from the different countries. But I still worry about some other things besides the export control for the semiconductor and the compute resources nationally to allocate. The other thing I'm really concerned about is artificial intelligence and the application and the influence to the society, because there are a lot of people here right now, they are very concerning about the replacement by artificial intelligence, no matter for the auto driving or some art and idea generation industry, maybe they have the concerns for the progresses, because as we all know, the frontier models, they get involved, too fast, and maybe maybe one day when we wake up, we're gonna face a new world built by the frontier models. So I think that is a problem not just faced by China, but all the around the world. We should focus more on that. I just noticed that there's an interview by Bill Gates, and there are some similar discussions in China, echoed the opinions from Bill Gates that maybe we should collect the tax for the humanoid robots or other AI technologies who can easily replace the workers to do something more for the weak. So yeah, I think that is a very emerging issues we should face, not just in China, but yeah, for the whole world.
Yeah, I agree with you that many countries actually face the common challenges from these emerging technologies, AI. And you also mentioned the China-US competition on AI. And I think you're right. I think this competition is already moving beyond individual models. And increasingly, what matters is the entire AI ecosystem. You have also mentioned, like semiconductors, computing, infrastructure, energy, data centers, supply chains, or cloud services, talents, so on and so forth. So my sense is that this makes the competition both broader and potentially more difficult to manage. Once AI becomes connected to economic security and the national security across so many different sectors, almost any technological issue can become geopolitical. So looking ahead, which areas do you think will become the main battlegrounds in China-US AI competition? And what risks should both sides be most concerned about?
And that is a very sharp question, because if we are talking about the battleground, that could have maybe some words under the table that they should fight each other directly. But I don't see the signs that the two countries fight each other directly in the area of artificial intelligence, no matter the frontier models or the cloud market right now, because basically the open source models from China are not officially recognized by most of the tech giants and startups in US. So we can see the data from OpenRouter and many other platforms that a lot of developers, they are starting to using the GLM, Minimax, Kimi, and many other Chinese open source models. But there are not so many companies in US, they publicly said the Chinese open source model are their main solutions for all of the coding and developing processes. Most of them are still using the productions from Anthropic, OpenAI, Google, and they are still using the cloud providers like Azure, AWS, and many other cloud providers from US side. So I think maybe the battleground is more like a metaphor, which represents the scenes we are observing right now, that China could be a long-term follower of US AI industry. Because as far as we know, there are still a very huge gap between the two countries' AI capabilities from all of the dimensions, no matter the model capability, the amount of the compute resources, even though the talents, even though there are a lot of very talented youngsters in Silicon Valley. They are coming from China, but we have to still recognize US have the biggest pool of the talents in AI. I think that is not an equal battle, if we call that a battle. So I think it's more like two runners who maybe one of them is running very fast and the other one is catching up very fast. So I think that is the first point I try to illustrate. And the second thing you mentioned about the risks, I think there is a very interesting point for observation, especially for the US side. That is a transition from the Trump administration, their attitude to the frontier models. Professor Sun, you are also the very leading scholars in this area. You have a lot of papers on that. You noticed that the attitude from the beginning of the Trump administration, he tried to lose the control of the regulation in US to promote the competition capabilities. But after the release, or we said the limited release of Mesos from Anthropic, we can see the transition from US government. White House and Congress and even Pentagon, they have a very harsh impression on that, and they started to rethinking about their strategy on the frontier models, especially how to regulate, or maybe whether they should regulate that. Maybe that was something cannot be discussed back to the beginning of 2024-25 when Trump got into White House at the beginning of the second term. But right now, I believe they consider these issues very, very seriously. And some U.S. partners, they are maybe try to collaborate more with China to see how to regulate the risks of the frontier models, especially on the areas of nuclear, biotechnology, and maybe some other areas. Especially maybe 1 month ago or some weeks ago, we noticed the news from the Stanford scientific team. They invent the new virus based on the large language models, right? There are a lot of warnings from the scientists and researchers around the world. I think that is something and some risks US and China should collaborate to prevent the common risks to face together. But it is not enough. US and China, they cannot just stop here, just talking about the frontier models and the frontier risks, especially the combination of the bio and nuclear, because that is so far away from the global South countries. If the two countries just talk about the frontier risks, the global south countries and their real needs could be ignored. That could be very dangerous. So maybe I think the two countries can have more agendas on the AI dialogues in the future. And maybe, yeah, the security and the safety issues are very important. And the policymakers and the researchers, industries, they have a lot of interest on that. That's fine. It's good. But we can maybe change to another angle that we can see the security issues as a global public goods. And we can try to provide the security like the sandboxes and another security toolbox for the global south countries. Then global south countries will not see the security agenda or narratives as a barrier to prevent their development. They will welcome and engage into the discussion. I think that could be a good sign for the two countries. And also, maybe the U.S. side should listen to more the Chinese side voices about the I described as equity, that maybe the export control is the thing, and maybe other control could be released in maybe a bigger pace and range, because maybe H200 are not enough. It is a gesture, but this gesture is not enough for me. I think if U.S. need to collaborate with China in the frontier model era, maybe the two countries need to show more sincere attitude and gestures to each other. Professor Sun.
Yeah, thank you very much. Actually, previously I planned to end with our discussion on some brighter side, that is the collaboration or cooperation between China and the US, and you have already mentioned a lot of points on that. Of course, the US and China will continue to compete in AI, but I agree that both countries also have an interest in preventing the competition from creating dangerous risks and issues such as military applications of AI, AI and the nuclear, misuse by non-state actors, critical infrastructure, and also frontier AI safety are difficult for either side to manage alone. And my own view is that the goal of an official AI dialogue very soon in September should not be to resolve the broader technological competition. That would be unrealistic. And a more achievable goal is to identify areas where both sides have a shared interest in preventing unintended outcomes. So do you have any other points to add? What do you expect the China-US governmental AI dialogue to actually discuss? And what might there be room for practical cooperation or even some basic consensus? And what would count as a realistic success for this dialogue?
Do you have anything to add? The last question. And some points I have mentioned previously, I think, is something to do with this question. And I want to add something. Especially when we talk about the competition or cooperation between the two countries, we focus more on the competition side, because geopolitical issues you mentioned at the very beginning, and the tech companies and the technology itself has something battleground to compete very fiercely right now. But I still want to believe some brighter side, because as we observed for the past many years, the achievements and success, not just from the China's lessons, but also the US lessons, it is the lessons of open and success. If you close the door, if you shut down the resources from the outer world, there are not the most brilliant minds in your country and to discuss with you, your progresses will be limited, especially for the AI era. It's very, very obvious, right? There are a lot of brilliant minds back to China from US, and also there are many brilliant youngsters, as I mentioned. They went to US from China, and the scientific collaboration between the two countries benefits the two countries for the past decades. So I think that is a good lesson that both sides should learn in the future. Especially when we face the maybe not battle, but the discussion between the closed source models or the open source models. I think it's a very, very practical and meaningful case that we should study. If there is no like Kimi or if there is no DeepSeek, maybe the whole world could be dominated by the closed source models like Claude or ChatGPT. I'm not saying closed source models are bad or even evil, but the users, the developers, not just in US, but all in every corner of the world, they have every right to choose. They should choose the different price, the different performance, and the different maybe weight of the models. So maybe the open source the models, the open weight models, they gave the choices to the people and developers around the world that they can see, okay, that is my choice to do that. I'm now forced to do something. I think that is a very good sign, and maybe that is a very good encouragement for Anthropic and OpenAI to do more to have the better performance on their models. So I think in a future dialogue, the US and the Chinese governments, the two sides should learn more from the experiences they already have. They open the cooperation and try to limit the competition and even fight and battle into a very, very small and limited areas, not to influence the whole exchange and communication of the two sides, technology and the policy exchange processes, Professor.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a great place for us to wrap up today's conversation. Professor Yao and I covered a lot of ground from WAIC and WAICO to China's AI development, global AI governance, and the evolving technological competition and also cooperation between China and the United States. So if there's one takeaway from today's discussion, I think it's that as AI becomes more powerful, the need for international cooperation becomes greater, not smaller. And countries will certainly continue to compete over technology, compute, supply chains, and innovation. But at the same time, no country can manage the risks and global consequences of AI entirely on its own. For China, initiatives like WAIC and WAICO represent an effort to contribute its own ideas and platforms to this evolving global governance landscape. But ultimately, their success will depend not simply on creating new institutions, but on whether they can build trust, encourage broad participation, and deliver meaningful cooperation. Professor Yao, thank you again very much for joining us today and for sharing your insights. And thanks
thank
to
you.
All
thank
of
you,
our
Professor
yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks to all of our listeners for tuning to this episode of China Voice. We hope today's conversation has given you a better understanding of how China sees the future of AI innovation, competition, and global governance. I'm Sun Chenghao. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time on China Voice.